Robert Pruner for Youngstown State University Project North American Indians by Jay Toth at Ravenna, Ohio on December 12th, 1979 at 8 p.m. Okay, let's start. Why don't you tell me about your grandparents, or as far back as you can remember, anything about your family?
Okay, I can only remember back as far as Native Americans. It comes from my father's side of my family, and my grandmother was married to a French fur trader, who just sort of passed through. Is how my father was born.
Where was this?
On the Rosebud Agency in South Dakota. Okay, I'm from the. My grandmother's name was Falling Star, and my grandfather's name was Pruner, which is my last name, French name. And when I went through my name, I took my grandmother's name when I was about 13, and so that's also my Indian name is Wichampong Spot, which means Falling Star.
Do you ever know your grandmother?
No.
How did you learn of your grandmother's name?
Well, from my father, I was raised on the reservation, and I was brought up in a pretty traditional family. You know, although you know a lot of the beliefs and stuff, and it wasn't. Although my father never talked too much about, you know, our ancestors and stuff, basically because I don't think he knew. He was a product of the Catholic mission schools that were taught that it was, you know, better to be white and to forget about being an Indian.
Your mother's white.
Yeah.
Why don't you describe what life was like at the ranch?
Okay, my family was a pretty typical Riz family. My father drank a lot. We were poor. My father worked at different times. He worked mainly as a cowboy. He was an itinerant ranch worker. I lived in a lot of places when I was a kid. I'm a product of BIA schools. I had attended Bureau of Schools for 12 years, which, you know, has fucked up my educational growth for quite a bit. And I think that life on the res is what's caused me to be really goal-oriented now, because I'm the first member of my family to ever graduate from high school. And right now I'm a college student, and I plan on being the first member of my family to make it through college. And it's because I just feel really strongly that I need to get my act together in order to go back to the res and help out, rather than go back and drink, which is, you know, a pretty common way of life at home.
What was school like? You talked about it wasn't very good.
Well, BIA schools are is a place that civil servants pass through for advancement. It looks really good on your record if you spend some time on an Indian reservation, because it's one of the worst places to work. And most BIA people view it as sort of a veil of tears that you pass through on your way to somewhere else. The Bureau of Educational System is just—it's terrible. It doesn't teach you anything. It's just in 12 years, all I learned to do was to read and write, and the only reason I learned that was because I wanted to.
You're talking about going back there and help out. How are you going to plan on helping out?
Well, my degree is in communications, and I plan on going back and setting up. We've got our own tribal radio station. I plan on going back and working in that, and possibly working in trying to get a television station together. If we can get the federal money to do it, there are people that have the talent. There are many people that have the talent to do it. It's just that nobody has gotten it all together enough to do it. And I hope to be able to try, you know, tie things together. And I'm also very interested in tribal politics. Tribal politics is something that I'm very concerned about, because the tribal leadership on my home reservation has been very poor.
Why don't we talk about that? What are your opinions of politics here?
It's basically a way to get rich quick, is to be elected tribal chairman. Everybody that's passed through there has left the office a lot wealthier than when they went into it. And I think that needs to change. That one of the things that happens with Native people is that they get an education, and gaining that education, they forget their Indianness, that they go back to the res and use the white man tricks that they learned in college to get rich, because it's very easy to scam that money that comes in from the government, because there's no controls over it. And I think that the money never reaches the people out in the outlying districts. The money stays right with the bureaucrats. You know, the grant money that comes in, for instance, on my home reservation, we get between $5 and $7 million a year in federal aid money. And yet there are still people that don't have running water in their homes. And that isn't right. The bureaucrats should be making $60,000 or $70,000 a year, and at the same time their own people are starving to death.
You say they squander money. How do they go about squandering money?
Well, it's for instance, at home, we just had a tribal election, and during the campaign, it came out that there was, I believe, $19,000 in CETA money that stopped with one man. The money came to him, and then it just disappeared. He had the authority to sign checks for this money, and he did. And the checks disappeared, the canceled checks disappeared. There's no record of what happened to the money. It just you know, $19,000, it just went into the blue. And I think that's one of the big weaknesses right now in tribal leadership, is that it's viewed as a way to get rich quick. It's an easy thing to do, to make a lot of money in a hurry, is to go back and get involved in tribal politics and to do this thing. And I hope to be able to change it. I don't know if I can or not, but there's several of my friends that feel the same way, and if we can change things on our own rails, then maybe it'll spread. I mean, I'm pretty idealistic about what's going to happen, and I don't think that I'll ever fall into the trap of getting rich quick in tribal politics, but right now that's the way it is.
How old are you?
I'm 23.
When was the last time, well, did you graduate from high school then?
Yeah.
And what got you to come out here?
Okay, well, I was in the military, and when I got out, I came to Ohio. There's a whole long story connected with it, but I wound up here. I've been living in Ohio for about a year and a half, although I spent the summer at home this year.
Mm-hmm. What did you find the summer to be like back home?
Pretty upsetting. A lot of my friends have become reservation Indians, which means
such as
living. They have no purpose in their life other than drinking. There's nothing there. There's, you know, no self-esteem. There's no pride. There's just to get to the bars and drink. And it hurts me to see people that I grew up with, and they're falling into the same trip that our parents did. And I'm not going to do it.
Just take a couple steps back. You're on a Rosebud reservation. Are you descendant of Dakota, Nakota?
Lakota.
Dakota. Back to the reservation. As far as housing, you get housing project, roads.
Okay, well, the housing projects are another ripoff. The houses we have, there are three separate housing programs that were done under the Johnson administration. And the worst ones are called transitionals. Okay, they were built for a cost of $3,400 to the contractor, for which he received $10,000 a home. Now, that's not much of a house. Okay, then there were two other projects. One was called Mutual Self-Help, which was pretty good because you helped build your own home. They gave you the stuff and the guidance to do it, and those turned out pretty good. And there was another project called the Sioux 400, where 400 homes were built, and they're death traps. If they catch on fire, they burn in 10 minutes. A lot of people have died in Sioux 400s because they were shoddily built, you know, government contracts, and they were shoddily built. I wasn't pleased at all with the way the government handled that. And yet, even with those housing projects, you still have people that are living in tar paper shacks, that are living in abandoned cars, and the poverty and the feeling of helplessness of being trapped in that kind of an environment.
Back to the housing, what what's a typical house like on the, as far as housing projects? What's it look like?
Okay, it's a two-bedroom, one-story house. It's like suburban tract housing, very except a lot cheaper version. Very, very poorly built, poor insulation. In some houses, you'll see cracks an inch or two wide in the walls, and they were just poorly put together. They were a get-rich-quick scam for some bureaucrat and some contractor. I have a very cynical view of the whole thing because it just...
Who were the contractors that built it?
I couldn't tell you.
What about transportation throughout the reservation?
Well, there's... Most people have a junk car that doesn't run very well. There's a pretty good road system. In the 60s, when there was a lot of money around it, we had a pretty good road system built. All the roads are going bad right now.
Any numbers or anything to the roads, any in particular?
You mean like Route 43?
Yeah.
US 18 runs right through the middle of the reservation. Everything else is just roads. A lot of the outlying districts are still only reachable by dirt roads.
Do you have a newspaper, national newspaper?
Well, from time to time, one starts up and dies out. There's also a newspaper that's done on the res, but it's not a native newspaper. It's called the Todd County Tribune, and the editor is white, and it's aimed towards the white community. It doesn't cover native news very much. It's much more concerned with Blackfoot. It's a small town newspaper because there is a town right in the middle of the reservation. That's where all the BIA people live and where the school teachers live. That it's a white community in the midst of a reservation, and the newspaper is aimed at that target.
So, what are some of the articles that they had discussed?
Oh, it's a small weekly newspaper. Articles such as what's happening in the city government, a lot of social columns like who visited who on Sunday afternoon. That's sort of a newspaper.
What about the health care?
It's Indian Health Service. It's not. I don't think it's very good. Anybody that can afford to go down into Nebraska to go to the white people's doctors does. The Indian Health Service, they have a lot of problems, and it's getting better. I really sincerely feel that it's improving, and I realize that things take time, but it's still not very good. I mean if I lived there, I would go down to Nebraska and I would go off the reservation for medical care if I could, if there's any way I could afford it.
What about the white-red relationship?
It's not good. It's touchy, and the activism among Native people in the past few years has caused a lot of white people to be very uneasy, and rightfully so. The relationship is shaky, and there are a lot of fights in taverns. In some places of business, it's very difficult for a Native person to get served. Typical racist activity, the same thing that a black person would go through in the South.
Mm-hmm. What about any issues, current issues, or anything like that?
I just won a court case against the federal government, taking the federal government to court for the Treaty of 1868, which gave the seven Sioux Nations all the land from the Missouri River in South Dakota west to the eastern part of the Rockies, which includes things like Rapid City, South Dakota, Mount Rushmore, the Black Hills. And the government turned around, and the Supreme Court awarded us $104 million, which isn't what we asked for. We asked for the land back. And to further add to this, the BIA came back and said, well, the United Sioux Tribes ripped off $90 some million on 638. Are you familiar with 638s? The self-help things that Nixon did the Nixon started. Today said, well, you ripped off all this money in the 638s, so we're just going to take this out of the $104 million, which we didn't want in the first place. And so we sent a delegation to Washington this summer, and we're not recognized by Carter at all. None of his people would speak to him. None of his people would had anything to do with him. They tried to set up an appointment, and nobody wanted anything to do with him. And I think that's the biggest political problem that's facing the Sioux tribes right now is the Black Hills money.
Mm-hmm. Are there any resources or anything, natural resources that are up to, coal or anything?
Well, every once in a while there's a big oil rumor, but nobody's drilled any wells yet. Other than that, there are no resources. It's pretty barren land.
I'm going to stop a second right now. Okay, you get a lot of tourism. Custer's last stand over nearby.
The Rosebud Bridge isn't where Custer's last stand took place, but there are a lot of tourists that pass through there. Although it hasn't been as prevalent in the past few years, we had a BIA superintendent who was really into promoting tourism for a few years when I was young, and there was a lot of tourism, but it slacked off in the past probably 10 years or so. There's a lot of potential for tourism. I think that could be one of the major industries on the reservation. It'd provide a lot of jobs if somebody was willing to promote it, because there are a lot of things that could be done. It's really a beautiful country, and it's too rough for industry, and you can't run cattle on it, and there are a lot of unemployed people that could be put into tourism support type stuff.
There's also a lot of pros and cons from tourism.
Yeah, I'm hip to that. That it's really not that good to, because it sort of perpetrates a stereotype. For one thing, the idea of, well, let's go up to the reservation and look at the Indians for a week. And that's one of the big problems that I have with it. But it's, as I see it, it's one of the possibilities that it's open to start giving Native people jobs that in industry that would be Native owned and operated. Rather than the CETA type programs that just sort of hand out money. And I think that it would really, that something needs to be done to perpetrate.
You're looking for self-help.
Yeah, something to perpetrate a sense of self-worth.
Since you're into politics, this recent article on Iran and the symbolic war, how do you feel about that?
I'm not too sure how I feel, because I haven't been discharged from the military, and I don't want to go back. If a war starts, I'm not too excited about going. I think that America is hung up on the idea of national honor, and we're going to find ourselves in the same trap that the French were in before they got involved in Vietnam. The idea of national pride is important, but not at the expense of thousands of lives. I think that it's really important that we get those people out of there as soon as possible. But on the other hand, I don't really know if it's worth sending thousands of young men over there to die.
But what do you feel about the symbolic part of what the person from the Indian centers?
Oh, I see what you... Well, I think it's good that the Indian centers are acting independently of the United States government. But I don't really know. Symbolic gestures are nice, but they don't mean anything at least to me. And it's good that they're not recognizing the government, but big deal, I'm sure Khomeini's not very upset that the Amtsan Indians have declared war.
Just a matter for stereotype. Since your major is communications, some time ago, there was a television program with a man and a woman, I can't remember their names. There was a video program that was removed from program. Not because of rain. Just around the white public didn't care about it. Do you recall?
No, I don't remember anything at all about it.
I can't recall the names of the people or the name of the program.
God, I can't remember anything about it. My stuff with communications and broadcasting is I'm oriented more towards journalism than I am towards entertainment type stuff. And I'm really not very impressed with the quality of entertainment programming. And so I don't pay that much attention to it.
So journalism, you plan on starting on those papers?
Possibly. We talked about it this summer. We're at the point right now where a friend of mine is getting involved in tribal politics, and in another 5 years I'll be in a position probably to run for chairman the way things look now. And we spend a lot of time.
His name is what?
Howard Valandra.
He's about how old?
25, 26.
And where's the scan as far as the reservation, as far as politics? What's his position now?
To eliminate, pretty much the same as mine, to eliminate the rip-offs, to bring help back to the people that really can't help themselves in a white society, that haven't been assimilated and who don't want to be assimilated, and to allow them to live and to have a sense of dignity.
Does he hold any political office at this time, or he?
Yeah, he works in the tribal treasurer's office. He's an auditor. He really doesn't. He works in the treasurer's office, but he doesn't work for the treasurer. He's there to watch over what's happening.
His name is again what?
Howard Valandra. His father was a tribal chairman in the 60s, his father served on Kennedy, Johnson, and Nixon's Indian commissions.
His name is?
Cato Valandra. As far as political alliances go, they're friends with Bob Burnett. I don't know if you heard of him. He wrote The Tortured Americans, a book called The Tortured Americans. Well, Burnett, and it was also an ex-tribal chairman. He still has a lot of clout, and I could see an alliance coming out of that organization.
But he stands pretty good as far as people are concerned. So when is elections up?
Well, we just had one in October, so it'll be 2 years.
You run every 2 years?
Yeah.
What's the limitations of office?
None.
Does he have a system?
Pardon me?
Does your tribal chairman have an assistant?
No, we have a tribal council with one representative from each of the 23 districts. And the chairman runs the council meetings.
How are your districts divided up?
Geographically. There are 23 districts scattered over about 200 miles.
In other words, rivers and mountains and type of thing.
Yeah. Fence lines, big cottonwood trees, or, you know, it's very...
So your councilmen are determined by population, or...?
No, there's one from each district.
No matter what the population is.
Yeah.